part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
This is Part-Time Fanboy. My name is Christian Horn, and I am on the line with Andres Salazar. And you are the creator of...
Pariah, Missouri, graphic novels.
Yes, and let's go to the Kickstarter. Right now, you've got a Kickstarter going on, and I want to let people know about that up front, and then we can talk more about the comic. So what is it that you are kickstarting for?
So what I'm kickstarting now is to have the third and final graphic novel to be published and produced. And so what I'm doing is I'm seeking for funds to be able to pay the penciler and the production of the book, the actual hard copies. And with that Kickstarter, it's also going to be kind of the culmination of the 4 years of doing this. So I'm going to be creating not only the trade paperback for the third book, but I'm going to be making an omnibus and collect the whole series all in one book, as well as some Kickstarter hardcovers that are going to be exclusive to the Kickstarter. So there's that. So yeah, basically it's to fund the production and costs of making this graphic novel.
Yeah, and so let's go into a little bit of what it's about, because I think I picked it up I don't think it was the last WonderCon, maybe the one before that.
Okay.
I picked up the first one. And I remember really when I finally got a chance to read it, because generally speaking, what happens is I'll go to cons and pick up like an armload of stuff and slowly be working my way through it. And what's interesting with me is that I remember really loving the first volume, and I just never wrote it up or anything. It is called Part-Time Fanboy, so I must have just spaced out on it, but I remember looking at it, and I remember your booth being kind of impressive. Like, you had like all the old West stuff, and there was like a lot of decorations, and and I remember it's like, I'm one of these guys that goes to conventions and I do like to pick up indie books, but it's hard for me because as I'm sure it is for a lot of fans, you want to grab everything, and it's like, no, slow down. If you grab everything and then you read the first one and you don't like it, then you're like screwed, right? You just spent a bunch. Yeah. But then, you know, yours was the case where I was like, I should have picked up another one.
I know.
And then I was going to, try and seek it out, and it just got like lost in the shuffle again. Right. So I apologize about that. But you know, I will start off by saying that, you know, I've gone and reread the first one and reread and read part of the second one. And I mean, this is a really, beyond it just being beautiful looking, I think it's a really good book.
Well, thanks, dude. That makes me feel good. Thank you. I appreciate that. I need all the validation I can get, so I appreciate you telling me that. It's a book that is probably different than a lot of books out there, as far as I'm really trying to tell a story here, and I do think the visuals are compelling, but so far, at least to my face, everyone who's read the book has really enjoyed it and felt it's a good story. And so that's really my most important thing that I'm trying to do, right, is tell a compelling, fun story. And so, yeah, I've been, you know, and when people would come to the booth, I'm always saying, look, you can get the first one, but I'm not, it's harder to get the others. And so it's like, I'm going to tell you right now, get the second one if you can, because you're going to want it. And that's not me trying to, you know, hard sell them. I just know that it's hard to get everything you want to get. And I'll take the Pepsi challenge with a lot of the other mainstream books out there. I think mine is up to snuff to that stuff. So I'm a huge consumer as well as a producer of books. And so I just came back from, you know, San Diego Comic-Con, and I got a small stack of stuff. I wish I could have bought more, but I just didn't have the funds for it, because it does cost, you know, and you do risk. There is a little bit of like uncertainty. It's like, oh, this guy's in small press. I don't know him. It looks cool, but is the story totally like weak, you know?
Yeah.
So you don't really know, and that's the kind of thing is you kind of have to test it out with dollars, and you know, dollars is a limited quantity.
Especially at like something like WonderCon or Comic-Con, where you know there's just so much choice at a convention like that, and it's just like absolutely crazy. So you know, it says a lot that your booth stood out, because I happen to be a fan of Westerns, and I definitely, it pulled me off to the side. And the fact that I specifically remember, you know, your booth and what your book was as soon as you emailed me, you know, I was like, oh, okay. I knew exactly what it was when I got your email. Like, I was like, I know what this is. I remember it. Let's do an interview, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you. You know, that's one of the things I wanted to do was, if I'm going to go, you know, tour the West Coast up and down trying to share my book, I really wanted to kind of create something that stood out as far as the display and make it, you know, memorable and different and thematic. And so, yeah, I put some thought and energy into making something, a presentation, right, for the product. And it's because I didn't have the dollars to get the big booth, I had to, in the confines of that, you know, 8 foot or 6 foot table, figure out how to stand out. And and it helps too that it was a Western, actually, because there's not that many Westerns. If it was a crime story, then maybe it would be a little more challenging to stand out just because of the genre.
Sure. So yeah, why don't we talk about the story of what Pariah is, because we haven't even really addressed that.
Yeah.
Somebody might be like, what the heck is this book? Why should I support it? So, I mean, we started off, I did say it is a Western, but it's beyond that. So why don't you talk a little bit?
Yeah. And you know what? I use the term Western only because that, I think, is what people kind of would assume it is, but it's actually not a Western. So what I really would pitch it to people as is an American frontier story with some mythology and kind of supernatural superstitions of the 1850s mixed in. I almost think of it as, you know, it's antebellum Mark Twain, Huckleberry Finn, then mix that with like the X-Files and the kind of paranormal mysteries of the 1850s. Because I wanted to set it in the Missouri area, and because it's before the Civil War, it really doesn't kind of qualify as some of the traditional Western tropes. So you don't have the cowboys, doing ranching out there in Kansas and further west. It's really, I wanted to tell a story of before that.
Okay.
So I wanted this hotbed of political environment, which was Missouri, which is where you had slaves and you had free blacks. And I wanted it to be more in a wooded area and kind of on the hills of Missouri. And if you've ever been out there, people know, I mean, Missouri is vastly different from Kansas. There's just a different climate and look to it. And I wanted that. I wanted to kind of be different than the classic, you know, lone gunman walk into a town, spaghetti Western, John Ford stuff.
Sure.
And so I would pitch it more as kind of an American frontier story, but definitely there's a supernatural element to it. And that really comes from my love of religions and mythologies. And so I studied a lot of religions of the 1850s and kind of the superstitions and ideas that most people believed in. And I kind of proposed the conceit of, what if all these beliefs and superstitions were real, right? And what would that world be like if, you know, everyone believed in God, And also they all believed in demons and those things were around and there's ghosts and there's all these kind of spooky things that we would think of as magic, but it's actually just the way people are there.
Yeah.
But it's subtly done. It's not like, you know, Hellboy or some of the other books. It's very blatant. It's kind of the magic and the kind of the spooky stuff does happen in parts of the book, but I'm kind of subtle with it in the beginning. And I kind of just slowly kind of build up into where we start seeing those things realize.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's really interesting because rereading at least the first book all the way through this time, I felt like you did a really good job of sort of setting up the environment, you know what I mean? Of setting up the town, setting up who the players are, what right. their role in everything is. But it was really interesting because it's one of the few books that I remember of sort of, you know how like in Batman stories, they're like Gotham is a character? Like,
yeah.
I really felt like that what you did and what the artist did as far as like being able to set up the setting was, you guys did a really great job with that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's to me, I mean, that's the why I called the book Pariah, Missouri, and not like, you know, Hiram's Men, or, you know, I don't name it after a person or a character. I name it after the place because to me, this whole story is about this town and how it's an important location. And there's reasons why, we won't go into this, but, and you read the story, why that place is important. And so I want that. I want to evoke, if you've seen the Deadwood, you know, I want to evoke those kind of boom towns where there's a mix of law and lawlessness. There's just an influx of pioneers and people trying to make money and trying to survive. And I wanted that kind of chaotic environment. And I want that to be a character, so to speak, you know?
Sure.
So, yeah, I'm glad you picked that up because that's really what I'm kind of going for. And that character or city is or town is going to evolve through the story. And so things change and the people and their relationships change because of it. So to me, that's really exciting that you said that. I'm glad you picked that up. That's what I was going for.
Oh no, I mean it's evident. And you know, the artist that you worked on, what's his name? I'm looking at
his name is Jose Pescador.
Yeah, I mean his stuff is absolutely beautiful and amazing. The thing that strikes me most about the visual style of this book is, I mean, it stands out different than everything else. I mean, and the other thing too is that it's a sort of very watercolor sort of painted yeah. style, and
yeah.
It's just gorgeous. Like, did you want to approach it that way as far as approaching it from the visual? You know, were you trying to look sort of like sort of that old school sort of sepia? Like, yeah. I keep saying Old West, and I know you said yeah. frontier,
no,
so
okay.
forgive me if that's an insult or anything.
Yeah. No, exactly. In fact, what I did was originally I wrote and drew 10 pages.
Oh, okay.
Of the book, and I watercolored it because I kind of grew up with watercolors. So I painted the pages on Bristol board, and I used watercolor. And I used I first did a page black and white. And I was talking to a friend, and he was like, you know what? Don't do black and white because black and white comics don't sell. Do color. And so I'm like, okay, but I really like the idea of minimal colors. So I just did browns, sepia tones.
Yeah.
And I did these browns. And then I found out that blacks, I had to do something with black because there's black, a guy with a black jacket or a black hat or black hair. And I'm like, well, I can't just do brown. What am I going to do? And then I thought about Superman and Batman and how Superman's hair is black, but you put blue as highlights.
Sure.
So I thought, okay, well, blue's actually kind of blue and orange kind of work together as complementary colors. So I thought, well, let's do blues and browns and let's kind of see how that works. And I did about 10 pages and I showed it to some people and I wasn't really confident on my pencils. And I was like, you know what? I'm just not rendering this the way I want. I really want to find a penciler. And so I found Jose to pencil it. So he pencils it and then I watercolor it basically. So I'm doing I use traditional board and paper, and I scan it in. And so there's nothing digital in that. It's all me watercoloring, 11 by 17 pages. And so that's
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, is that nerve-wracking for you at all? Because
I enjoy it. I actually find it fun. I like doing it.
Making mistakes or anything like that.
No, you know what? I've been doing it for a while now, and I don't really have too many. I've only had to go back and redo like 2 pages ever. Yeah, I kind of plan it out. I kind of know what I'm going to do, so I don't have too much of a problem with that. But it is unforgiving. So if you screw it up, you are kind of hosed.
Yeah,
completely. Got to go back and fix it. But yeah, I've been pretty lucky. I don't have too many of those problems. But I love it. I think the fact that we did it that way and I stuck to my guns with doing it like that and not doing it digitally or hiring somebody else, but doing it myself, I think that really is attractive. And that's kind of the initial thing that people grab onto. So that's good. I'm happy about that.
So how did you, you find your penciler and he's just doing, how did you find him? And B, he just does the pencils?
He just does the pencils. I found him at Comic-Con.
Oh, okay.
I found him at Comic-Con actually through another person. So what I used to do is I'm a writer.
Yeah.
Colorist, but I would go to Comic-Con and I would go to the portfolio reviews, right? And I don't know if you've been to Comic-Con or not, but a lot of the convention portfolio reviews. I go up to the top floor, go to the portfolio review, and then I scout out people. I basically stalk the artists and I say, "Hey, look, man, I'm a writer. I need an artist for this book. Blah blah blah. Do you want to work together?"
Yeah.
And through that, I get a bunch of business cards, and half of them work out or don't work out or whatever. And I found one guy there, and his page rate was kind of high, and he was busy. But he said, "Hey, I got a friend of mine who could do it, and he's great. Let me get in touch with you." And so, I found my artist, Jose, basically through a contact at Comic-Con that I met. So, I was super stoked. He's a great guy. He is prolific. He does a lot of books, a lot of comics, a lot of Mexican comics, a lot of
props. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. He does a lot of stuff. He is cranking out work all the time. He does these big murals for people, oil paintings. He is an artiste, man. He's pretty amazing. So I got him. I'm super stoked. And then we just started hitting the ground running. And so I paid him for pencils. When I get the pencils, then I go and I'll ink it and I'll watercolor it. And so sometimes I'll watercolor it first on pencils and then I'll like ink over that. And so I do that. Then we scan it and then I letter it and put it in the book.
So are you taking his original pencils and painting over them?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. So what he does, since he's in Mexico, this would cost too much to ship them.
Yeah.
He just sends me digital files.
Yeah.
He sends me the digital pencils and then I print those out.
Gotcha.
And then I print those out and then I do my magic on it.
Gotcha.
And then we do forward. So the idea was to do 5 books.
Okay.
I was going to do 5 books, and this was all going to lead up to a very important event in 1861, the American Civil War.
Sure.
And really excited about it. But then, each book, which is about 110 pages or so, takes about a year.
Okay.
Almost a year to do. And so this is the third year, almost fourth year, and he's so busy with other stuff, and I have other things I want to do. And I don't want to just be the guy who does Western books.
Uh-huh.
So I decided to make the executive decision of making the third book the final book.
Okay. For now. Uh-huh.
So that way he can go off and do something different if he wants. I can do some science fiction stuff that I want to do. I want to tell other stuff. Because Westerns are a love of mine, but they're not the most commercial of genres. They're not the thing that everyone wants to grab. And so I got to look to that a little bit as far as planning out my career.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to end it with the third book, which is this book here on the Kickstarter. And that'll kind of bookend the story. And yes, there's more stories I have. There's more things we're going to do maybe in the future. But for now, I'm going to end it up with a nice little bow and people will be satisfied with the story for now. And maybe, you know, maybe in a few years, or maybe some publisher loves it to death and wants to do more. And in that case, we would do more. But
yeah, it's interesting to me because, you know, I'm scrolling through the book right now, at least the first one. And it's sad to me that it's kind of what sells might be defined by genre, because, you know, not to just completely continue to rain down compliments on you guys, but honestly, this is a gorgeous book. Like, I mean, I am at, with the first book and the second book, you know, I haven't finished the second book, but either way, I mean, it is just beautiful. I mean, there's just so much done with figure composition, with perspective, with, you know, the coloring is really beautiful. And to me, it just kind of, it kind of bums me out that that something would be defined by, so that something as beautiful as this would not sell based on the gorgeousness of it, and, you know, its story, that people might look past it because of genre. That just seems kind of so narrow-minded to me.
Yeah, it's a super, but I feel the same way. I appreciate your comments. Thank you so much for those compliments. But no, I totally feel the same way. And unfortunately, that's the marketplace, man. It sucks. But like, I mean, I even spoke, you know, last week I spoke to the guys at Humanoids, because I know some of the creators there, and they're like, dude, you got to show it to them. So I showed it to their guys, and, you know, the editor in chief was like, this is cool, it looks great, but, you know, we're looking for these types of stories. And if you go to, you know, I've talked to some producers in Hollywood and that kind of thing, and it's the same thing. It's like, Westerns don't sell, periods don't sell, unless you have a huge, huge following. You know, they want modern stuff. They want, you know, it's just...
Oh, that's so narrow-minded, though.
If you look at Jonah Hex, which has, I don't know how, you know, 50 or so many years of history, that sells, you know, that book sold a fraction of what, you know, some of the other books sold. Sure. So if DC can't sell Jonah Hex, they're not going to sell, you know, Pariah Missouri. That's kind of, you know what I mean? And so unfortunately, I totally wish it was different, but the way the marketing guys, you know, or the editors, how they kind of justify projects and expenses, it's like, what's going to bring in money, you know? And if True Grit and Hateful Eight, and if all those movies would have done, like, you know, Avengers numbers, then we might be having different conversations.
Sure.
But those awesome movies that we love that are Westerns, they do respectable, but they're not the blockbusters, you know?
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, I mean, if I'm using Humanoids as an example, you know, basically they seem to be sort of like the European sort of like right outlet. Like, they're pulling from the European market and bringing stuff here. And the European market, the stuff is gorgeous and beautiful. And it's not always, there is sci-fi, and there's definitely a couple of like Hitman books that I've read. You know, that sort of stereotypical stuff. But this sort of thing, I mean, if you had me in the room, I'd be like, guys, this is honestly what you do. Like, this is a beautiful looking book, and the genre shouldn't limit it. Like, this is what they're known for. Like, I think Humanoids, and I'm like, it's sort of like a higher visual class of comics. You know what I'm saying?
I totally agree. I actually am looking at a stack of books from them. I love that company, and I love what they produce.
Yeah.
I was surprised, but, you know, I'm going to work on a different thing. I would love to have something from them. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Mobius and all that stuff. Huge. Yeah. So we'll see.
Well, in any case, you know, I'm just a big fan of the visual palette of the book. I think it's really amazing. But it seems like you're going to, like, with the new editions or the new, at least, omnibus, you're updating the colors, or you're changing them?
Yeah. So what I'm going to do is, I'm probably just going to pick, it's really going to come down to time and effort, but I'm going to select somewhere between 10 and 20 pages from the first book. that I'm just not super happy about the coloring.
Okay.
So a lot of it I like, but there's just a couple. I feel a little bit like George Lucas or Frank Frazetta, who and redoes their stuff. But it's like there's just a couple of pages where I'm like, oh, I wish it was just a little different. So I'm just going to kind of – I'm not going to do the whole book. That would take me forever. But I'm going to do a selection of pages that I feel like I could just blend it a little better. I could make it a little clearer. You know, those very first ones I did like almost 4 years ago. And, if you've seen the new stuff, when you start looking at book two and then book three, I'm still keeping a minimal palette, but I think some of my techniques are better, my light sources and such. So I just want to update a little bit. You know what I mean? Because my idea is that this will be it for Pariah. So I want to like make this awesome omnibus. And that'll be what I sell from now on. And that's it. And so I don't want to go back and reprint the trades. I don't want to have to like deal with all those older versions. I just want to have the omnibus, be super stoked and happy about the final product of it, not have any I wish I could have or I wish I didn't do that. And then it'd be done.
Yeah. So
yeah, I am going to go back. But trust me, I'm not going to like change the feel of it. And it'll just be a few pages where I'm just like, I wish I would have done this or that. And
well, yeah, it's interesting because one of the things I did seem to notice is like looking through book one, looking through book two, and looking at a little bit of book three, it seems like the main hue sort of changes a little bit. Like book one, it seems like oranges and reds seem to be predominant, like maybe a little bit of browns. And then book two, it seems to move towards blues. And then book three, it seems to move towards greens and sort of like more like spring or fall colors. Am I correct in that assessment?
Yeah, no, that's right. That is right. Yeah, I am changing. When you read the whole story, you will see kind of like a change in the palette slightly. And that's because of the story and a couple of reasons. But yeah, I am doing that deliberately. And I hope it works in this effect I'm trying to do.
Okay. Overall.
But yeah, I am going to do that. And also some of that too is the paints I used. So I kind of switched paints. I was using one type in the beginning, and then I started using another type. And so I'm changing types, kind of maybe shifted a few things up. And then in Photoshop, I do have to kind of – there are some pages where I have to kind of dial it down a little bit or kind of like massage it so that they all kind of work out. But
Yeah,
but I'm going to go back and just fix a few little spots.
It's really interesting. I'm looking through the third preview right now, and it seems like you've got, it's definitely a little bit more, a slightly more refined look, which is interesting, and certain elements pop a little bit more than in the first book. Like the first, and it's interesting because that's what I really liked about the first book was that it was very sort of an old world feel to it. And now this one still has that old world feel, but you've brought, it seems like there's a bit more of a modern tone to it as far as like coloring is concerned. That's really interesting.
Well, yeah, you know, well, the real thing I'm glad you're saying that because I'm going to take all this as I work on this book because very few people have seen book three, that preview.
Yes.
Like, for instance, the big thing, of course, is the greens, right, in the forest. And we've never had greens really in the books before. And the idea was that because this story is about the Mexican Comanche character, Toro, that I wanted to give it that natural, you know, the natural world kind of tone to it and coloring. So we do have some of those. And I am trying to layer more color on there. And so I feel like in some ways the first book, it's very stark. It's very like boom and boom, you know, it's kind of like the colors are very stark and it's very saturated. And in this, I'm going a little bit more natural.
Sure.
So, talking about this out loud, I need to think about if I redo some of that first book, how I'm going to do that. If I'm going to, you know what I mean? I want to make sure that it's not, I don't want people to like, think that a new artist came on board.
Sure. You know,
that's the big thing because That, you know, for, okay, you're a huge comic fan. I am too. I don't know if you remember when, like, Infinity Gauntlet came out.
Yeah.
Like, Infinity Gauntlet comes out in, like, 1990 or 91 or whatever. And, you know, you got George Perez, and he's, like, drawing it, I believe, in the first couple issues. And then suddenly, it's, like, Ron Lim.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
You're like, wait, what happened? Now, Ron Lim is great.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, there's a big difference when you're used to seeing, like, George Perez, and then suddenly Ron Lim jumps in on issue 4.
Yeah.
So I don't want that effect. I don't want it to be like, wait a minute. Well, this isn't Pariah. This isn't the book I like, you know. So I need to think about that. I want to make sure that it's not too jarring.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, for me, and if you want my very biased opinion, and, you know, you may not, I'm just one person. Honestly, like, I'm scrolling through these digital files, and I think the first one is perfect the way it is. And the way that the colors progress, like, you've probably done this yourself. I'm going through 2, I'm going through 3, and just going, like, it shows like a natural progression of the story. And there's a part of me that really likes the way it starts out. And then the way that the new colors are sort of introduced, and I'm like, oh, this is like a new level to the story. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's very nice. I mean, I know that you as a creator are like, you want to pull like the George Lucas and be like, no, I have to fix it. It has to be perfect. But in my opinion, I don't see anything glaring that's like, oh, no, that needs to go. It may be your own personal sort of bias against the way where you were like 3 years ago artistically, or whatever speed you had to work at. So in my opinion, I think it looks great. So take that for what it is.
I appreciate that. So I'll definitely take that under advisement and think about that, because I mean, it is more work to redo painting, you know. I don't necessarily want to spend more hours on it. So maybe I will think about that. There was just a couple spots, particularly in the first book, when it's at night.
Yeah.
You know, when I do, you know, one of the trick is, and your listeners will check this out when they get the book, is daytimes are kind of these sepia tones, and then at night we go blue, right? Yeah. So nighttime, it's blue. Well, there's a couple pages in particular that have always annoyed me, because I feel like it's so monochromatic, and I'm just literally using one tube of paint for the whole page, that we're losing a little bit of the depth in it. And I'm wondering if I just repaint it and add a little bit, a few little things in there, that I can bring out the color and you can see it better. I just feel like sometimes it's hard to see because it's just all one tone.
Yeah. But, and you're the creator. You know, you do what you want to do. But for me, that also adds to the moodiness of it. You know what I'm saying? So it's interesting. But yeah, not to belabor too much on that point, because I mean, I think like what you've done is really a great looking book. Let's talk a little bit about yourself. I mean, how did you're a stand-up comic. I mean, it says in the bio, it seems like you do a lot of different things. How did you get into comics?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Little Rock, Arkansas, and so I read comics as a kid. My mom gave me, I think it was like G.I. Joe #6 was the very first comic I had.
Nice.
You know, I grew up reading comic books, so I've always loved them. I've always kind of collected them. But I went to school for molecular biology.
I was a scientist.
Yeah, I kind of like lived the biotech world, that kind of thing. I've learned that it's just a process of learning is what I really enjoy. So I love learning things.
Uh-huh.
And I really enjoyed science and just the cool stuff that goes on in biology. So I kind of lived that life for a while. But I've always had a passion for story. I did a few independent films like when I was in college and in the theater groups. And so I've always been around the arts.
Yeah.
My family are artists. My mom was an artist, my grandparents. And so I grew up with art around me and theater and stuff. And so I've always wanted to do it, but I've always kind of been chicken. And so I've always, you know, I was like, oh man, I can't do that because I'll be poor and I won't have money and it'll be struggling. And so I kind of chickened out in my 20s. And it wasn't until I was in my 30s that I said, you know what, screw it, let's do this. and let's make a comic book. And I wish I would have done it earlier. I tried to be, actually, I take that back. In my 20s, I tried to be an inker. So I did apply to be inker for DC and Marvel, and I still have my inking like little portfolio. So I tried to be an inker, and I never got any jobs. But so I had been kind of trying a little bit peripherally. But then, you know, eventually I said, you know, let's just make my own book. Yeah. And I thought about the genres that I like, and I said, I'm going to make something that I like. I'm going to make a comic book that appeals to me. Because that's the most important thing. And I wasn't going to do superheroes or crime because I felt there was too much of that.
Okay.
So I thought, let me do Westerns, man. I want to do Westerns because I love Western comics. I love Westerns. And so I thought, let me do a Western, but then I also like religions and mythologies. And so I added some supernatural bits to it. And then that kind of became... you know, I had different names for it. It was going to be called Sagebrush. I mean, a bunch of crazy things. And then I just wound up sticking with Pariah, Missouri. And I'm like, I want to be in Missouri, so let's call it Pariah, Missouri. I was watching Twin Peaks, you know?
Uh-huh.
So there's these shows that are about these places, right? Yeah. This is very much like Twin Peaks. And I thought, like, I want it to be about a place. And I was watching Deadwood, too, right? And I love Deadwood.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wanted about the name of a town, and I wanted it to be indicative of the time, and I wanted it before the Civil War, because I wanted to deal with, like, racism and the slaves, and I wanted to deal with that. So that's kind of come in the story. And so... And then I just kind of started cobbled together a story, and you know, and the rest is me trying to draw it and finding Jose and so forth. So it's kind of been a meandering path. You know, I've done stand up comedy, I've written some films, little things like that. But this is kind of my big first project that I can say that is getting the most attention.
Well, and so what's your favorite Western
movie?
Yeah.
My favorite Western movie. Well, I mean, my favorite's probably not the best, but my favorite is Tombstone.
Oh, really?
I love Tombstone.
It's a great movie.
But the best might be, maybe like one of Akira Kurosawa's films, because those are Westerns.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
Seven Samurai is a good one, or the Fistful of Dollars ones. What are the Japanese names? Darn it!
I can't remember off the top of my head.
I can't remember, but those two, Fistful of Dollars and a few dollars more. Those are both actually Akira Kurosawa films.
I love The Wild Bunch and
Searchers.
The Search. That's so funny because people love The Searchers, and I'm not a John Wayne fan. I can't stand John Wayne. And I watched it like maybe a year or two ago for the first time. I love old movies, but I avoid like John Wayne movies like The Plague. I'm like, I just don't. I can't. And I watched The Searchers, and something didn't connect, so maybe I need to rewatch it.
Cowboys is good too. Have you seen Cowboys?
No.
Cowboys is good. It's another John Wayne though.
Okay. But
he basically gets all these kids, and he rounds up all these kids in the town to help him do a cattle run or whatever you call it. I love that. I love that movie. That's a good one. The modern ones are pretty good too. True Grit is a good film.
Okay.
I like the modern one, Coen Brothers one. What else? I like the Clint Eastwood stuff, Pale Rider, Josie Wales.
Sure.
It's both good, and his spaghetti westerns are good too.
Yeah. The Charles Bronson, Sergio Leone one. I'm blanking out on it right now.
A time in the West.
Once Upon a Time in the West.
Once Upon a Time.
Oh, that one's one of my favorites of all time.
That's
too.
A good one.
Yeah, I love that one too. I think it's really interesting because when I was a kid, I hated westerns. I never liked them. I'm like, this is boring. There's horses. Okay, whatever. And then when I got older, I think it might take a certain level of I mean, when we were growing up, it was all like Star Wars and like, you know, yeah. space and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I think that that kind of replaced that frontier out west adventure sort of thing in my mind. But then it wasn't until I got older where I started watching a lot of these, like even Kirk Douglas, like Lonely Are the Brave, like you would see, I mean, that's more of a modern Western, but where you start feeling this wistfulness or wanderlust where it's like, oh, I get this now. Like, I get the like wanting to be alone and travel and like experience a world that has not in a different way than sort of like the final frontier, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I feel like people don't realize how many Western tropes are out there in modern stuff. For instance, you know, Walking Dead is a Western.
Yeah.
You know, in many ways. I mean, The Road is a Western. A lot of these post-apocalyptic films are Westerns, really. They're just disguised in this other kind of thing, but they're really Western stories.
Yeah.
You know? I think the whole zombie apocalypse stuff, that's all like Western classics.
Yeah. I think it was I think the one that I saw in the theater was Unforgiven, the Clint Eastwood one.
Yes.
And that was the one that made my brain go, oh, this is different. Like, wait a minute. Like, I kind of get it. And then I went back and watched like The Magnificent Seven and a bunch of Sergio Leone stuff again. And I was like, oh, I get this. Like, I'm totally with this. Like, I know what they're going for now. And before I thought it was just like, you know, cowboys and Indians, like people shooting at each other. And I was just like, oh, it wasn't until I think I saw Unforgiven and that was the first movie. Obviously it was out at a time where I was younger and I was like, oh, something snapped. And I get this. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Unforgiven deconstructs the Western genre just like The Watchmen does superheroes.
Yeah.
It's very much a deconstruction of that whole trope and genre. And Unforgiven's a really good one.
Yeah.
That's a really good one. I forgot
it. It really is. So were you into Western comics when you were a kid or was it superheroes or?
No, you know what? I was like every other kid. I was a Marvel kid.
Okay.
Until high school. And then my best friend got me into DC.
Okay.
We played the Marvel superheroes role playing.
Yeah, okay.
We played Marvel superheroes role playing game, but then he made me play the DC superhero role playing game. So we played that. And I'm a huge X-Men fan. You know, I grew up with the X-Men. That was like my thing. Never ever really read Western comics.
Yeah, me neither.
It's just. Only recently did I get into like Jonah Hex and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I just never, again, if I was maybe 20 years older when Bonanza and all those shows were on TV, I probably would totally be into it.
Yeah.
We kind of hit the Star Wars thing, like you said. So we kind of missed a lot of that. So I never read Western comics. So when I was doing this one, I looked up some things, you know, and I did read the newest, like Jimmy Palmiotti and Gray, the Palmiotti and Gray Jonah Hex books.
Yeah.
But I didn't like do a huge dive into like all the Dell comics and everything that were Westerns. I just kind of just told my story the way it is.
Yeah. Did you ever approach a publisher with this or were you immediately just like, I'm going to do it myself?
No, I totally put. Yeah, I'm self-published, really by necessity.
Okay.
You know, I would love if, you know, Vertigo or Boom or IDW, whoever were to pick it up. I'm basically I pitched it out to everybody. I pitched it out before we had art, which was not a good idea
because
you have to do it with the book. And then I've pitched it out with the books and stuff. You know, I've talked to some of the guys at Image and things, and it's just I think the genre is a big stumbling block for a lot of people. I think also because I'm unknown, that's another stumbling block. Like if I was a writer from TV that already had credits, or if I had a novel, you know, or if I was an established comic book writer, I think I might get a second look, but because I'm unknown and the genre, I think it's a hard one for people to put on a slate.
That kind of like makes me angry because I mean, so much of say like the Image and indie thing, Boom or whatever, are very much like, we're looking for new stories. We're looking for new, you know, this is like a new frontier. We're breaking through. And I'm like, this seems like it would be a perfect fit. Like, honestly, looking at this, and it's not just the story, it the visual quality of it too, again, is like, how could somebody look at this and be like, we are not even remotely interested? Because I do think that this would be like a perfect fit for that sort of like indie publisher.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I thought so too. I had hoped so, definitely. I mean, I'll be frank. I wouldn't have probably done this for the last 4 years if I didn't think it would have went this way. In other words, when I first came up with the idea, if I would have known all the publishers said, dude, we're not going to do a Western, they don't sell, I probably would be doing a crime book.
Uh-huh.
Just because my goal has always been to be published. You know, I don't want to have to do this myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Paycheck. So I kind of found out the hard way that they weren't going to touch it. And then it was after that I said, well, then screw you guys. I'm going to do it myself.
Sure.
If Dave Sim could do it with Cerebus, and I'm not nearly as good as he is, but I'm going to at least – I'll just self-publish it, and then I'll do it for the people who want it. But, yeah, I had thought that it would be a great home for Image and stuff, but I guess you know, there's just a lot of factors that I'm not privy to that prevent it from going forward. But that's okay. To me, it's about making good content, and you know, good content rises. And so people always tell me that when I've talked to other screenwriters and things, they said, you know what? The most important thing to do is just make an awesome script. And if it is awesome, people will find it. Like, you know, people will find it. And so just do the best you can, make it just the best, you know, and if it takes a little longer, that's okay. But people will find it if it's great. So that's my job. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to do anything more than that, is tell a great comic book story in this, you know, format. And hopefully people will dig it. And so far, I've had great, great feedback, so I'm really, really happy.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, what's the because I mean, I'm assuming that up until this point, before the Kickstarter, you were pretty much just selling this at conventions, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I primarily sell face to face at shows or on the Kickstarter. I get some sales through the website, but you know, very little. It's basically face to face, you know, at shows and then through Kickstarter. So that's where people, and I take that back. I am in Diamond. So I put the first book, volume one, that you have in Diamond. Mm-hmm. And I was a little disappointed with how that turned out. Okay. So I haven't put the second book, and it remains to be seen if I'm going to do what I'm going to do about the omnibus, if that's going to go in Diamond or not. The problem with Diamond really is they're the only game in town. And the numbers they give you are just – it's really hard for an independent guy to use them because of the percentages.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, if I were to, say, print, you know, 20,000 copies of the book to the point where my per unit cost of the book was so small that then I could give it to Diamond, then that would be one thing. But because my numbers are not that large – my per unit cost is higher than, you know, Marvel, of course. You know, Marvel, they print a trade, it's probably like a buck and a half to print the trade, you know, maybe even less. I don't even know.
Yeah.
But, you know, so they can sell it for $20 because it only costs, you know, a buck to make. Me, it costs a lot more to make a book. So after the distributor gets a cut, the retailer gets a cut, you know, everyone's getting a piece of that MSRP. Then my piece is so small, it's like it's not worth shipping them, right?
Gotcha.
So I am in Diamond, but I don't know what we're going to do with that. And I think that's just a That's a whole other conversation of how to fix that system. I don't know.
And so, I mean, well, yeah, I believe that that system is completely, to a certain extent, wrecked. And making a print comic on your own, from the lot of conversations that I've had, including some on this podcast, can be like a backbreaking ordeal.
Yeah.
Did you ever think of like turning just to the web and just being like, hey, I've got a web comic, and like foregoing the sort of print venue? Or was it just like you just didn't see like anything in that?
Yeah. You know what? I really didn't know how to monetize it, you know, the web. And I wasn't sure what the end product would be. I mean, now that I've been doing this, I totally probably would do that. If I would do this over, I would probably do that. I would make a web comic. I would make this a running web comic, and then after a year, collect it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what guys like Girl Genius does.
Yeah.
They make truckloads on their Kickstarters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because it's been a web comic for so long and people go to there every day to read it, that when the Kickstarter hits, they all want to get a hard copy of it.
Yeah.
And so you are building this organic audience day by day, and it just compounds like interest, you know, over the years. True. So you have this huge, massive audience that will buy anything you put out.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't do that, and I wish I would have. Part of also is my lack of technical skills. I don't know. I mean, my website's a WordPress. I'm not that great at it. I'm trying to figure out how to do that, to put them on as web comics. So just getting familiar with the technology to do that is something I'm working on now. So, but I would like to do that. I think it's probably a smart thing to do, is to just offer it free as a web comic, get in on that kind of audience and world,
yeah,
and use that for when the prints come, if you decide to go print.
Yeah.
But no, but initially the idea was to make a comic, right?
Sure.
So I felt like, oh, web comic would be the long route, because I felt like, oh, then I gotta upload each page, and then I gotta figure out how to, you know, slice them up into panels, and it just felt like more work.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't do that. I just said, screw it. I'm just going to make a comic book that's paper and people can put in their backpack. Now looking back, I would spend the extra effort to put it as a webcomic first.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting, because, you know, the thing that seems to be the biggest thing that you hear on the web or any articles that you read is that it's become increasingly hard, not just to be an independent creator, but even to be a working artist in comics today, that it's almost monetarily like a losing sum game.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you've got guys who are writing 4 or 5 comics, mainstream DC Marvel comics, and they're like, I think just now quitting their jobs to do that.
Yeah.
Which means if you've got Bendez and whoever writing, you know, 6 books, that's 5 other books that someone else doesn't have, because he's got them, you know?
Yeah, sure.
It felt like Chris Claremont in the 80s when he just wrote, you know, X-Men and had a living and survived and provided for his family.
Yeah.
It's like you got to do 6 books to provide for your family, which then means that there's other people that won't get books because, you know, they're going to the one guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's writers. So the artist is the same. They got their own issue. And so it is more challenging. And so I do try to do some freelance stuff and different art. You know, I do design and things, so I work on that as well. But it's a total challenge. It's changing. I feel like each year it's changing, just like Kickstarter changes. You know, it's been changing for the last couple of years. And I don't really know where it's all going, but
okay.
Hopefully we'll figure it out.
Yeah, hopefully so. I mean, well, as far as your Kickstarter is concerned, I mean, you've funded already, but obviously we want people to keep throwing money at it. So the people going on Kickstarter, well, the one thing that we kind of glossed over, we said generally what the book was about, but do you want to, before we, you know, wrap up, talk about the characters that are in the book? Because we didn't really address that at all.
Okay, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so the character, so what I wanted to do was, there was a show in the 80s I loved called The A-Team.
Okay.
you haven't seen the A-Team, you gotta go watch the A-Team. It's like the best show ever.
Okay.
Kid, now watch the A-Team. And it's this motley, it's a classic motley crew of guys who are going saving the, you know, saving little towns. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so that's kind of what I patterned these characters after. I wanted a Han Solo-ish kind of charismatic, roguish guy, and that's Hiram Buchanan. And he's actually, you find out early on, he's more than just this little cheat and a wily guy, but he's actually works for a guy named Alan Pinkerton from Chicago. And if you know your history, you might know a little bit about that.
Yeah.
He basically finds these, you know, little characters in the town and kind of manipulates them to help him for this little mission he's working on. So we've got Toro, who is this half Mexican, half Comanche Indian, a bounty hunter who's known for strong wine and strong women. And he has some kind of shamanistic abilities that he can do, communicate with animals and so forth. We have Nelly, and Nelly is kind of this tough as nails chick with a kind of sordid past, and she goes through a transformation in the story, as well as the last of the quartet is Jean Lafitte, who's a free black man in a border state, kind of running from something that happened in his past in New Orleans. So, and he's got a kind of a practitioner of voodoo magic and kind of the hoodoo of Haiti. So they each have their own past. They all have these little foibles and problems, and we're going to try to develop those as much as possible in the stories. And they're kind of working together to save the town, or at least find out what happened to this marshal named Marshal Cody, who goes missing. So that's where the story starts out, is Marshal Cody's missing, what happened to him, what's going on. And there's this undercurrent of something else creepy is happening in the town. And there's a crime kind of syndicate or organization that's in this little boom town as well, that Hiram's trying to find out who's involved in. So I like ensemble casts of stories. You know, I love the West Wing, where you have like 20 main characters.
Sure.
So in this story, there's a bunch of different characters, and I try to spend some time on everybody to give them something interesting to chew on and give them some backstory. And hopefully everyone will be satisfied at the end of this. I really do wish sometimes it was longer, because there's so much more that I want to tell these characters, but I have a feeling that I'll be able to go back to it, you know, in the future, and be able to tell more about everyone's story. But yeah, so basically those are the kind of the main characters. I wanted to have an Indian, a woman, a black man, this cheat, you know, Han Solo type guy, and have them coming from totally different worlds, but working together to save the town.
Yeah. No, it's a really good combination of characters. And then you've got like a really good couple of villains in there. Some, you know, industrialists, or, you know, hotel guy. So, I mean, you've definitely taken a lot of stuff from the genre and mixed and matched it. And I think it's a really good result. I mean, like I said, I've been through like the first book and a half, and I contributed to the omnibus because I want to have the whole thing. And I think that it's, you've done a really good job, and I really, really do like the book a lot. So I hope that, your Kickstarter is already funded, but anybody who's out there, just fund this book, because, you know, more money is good, and it's actually a really great read, and artistically it's beautiful. I mean, I think it's one of the better looking books I've read out there. So I can't recommend it highly enough just for that. So
yeah, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for saying that. And and this will be most likely, unless I get a call from somebody, the main way people will get the book. Yeah. So unless they reach out to me, or unless you hear a news article that says Image picks up the book, you know, this is the way it's going to, you're going to get it. So yeah. This is kind of like the main way people can get a hold of it. And we do have stretch goals. So it's not just, I want more money, but also the more people that get involved with the program, with the campaign, I'm unlocking new stuff. So I'm going to have a sketchbook of all of Jose's sketches. We're going to do a PDF of that.
Wow.
We're going to do a PDF of like the script. So you can actually read the comic book script, how I script it out.
Oh, that's great.
So there's a lot of different new pages I'm doing. I'm also going to give all the backers a print and play version of Time Stories that is Pariah. So Time Stories is a board game that's pretty popular out there in the board gaming community. I spent like a month and a half building Pariah, Missouri Time Stories. So people can like get that for free if they back the project, and they can print it out and play that game. So
that's cool.
There's a lot of fun stuff I'm trying to do to add. So there's a lot of free stuff I'm throwing out there because this is the last Kickstarter I'm doing for this book.
Oh, okay.
After this, I'm going off into science fiction or some other genre. I got to redesign my booth and all that. But for now, I want to kind of go out with a bang, give all the loyal fans and backers and people some fun stuff, and then I'm gonna put all this away in a storage facility or something.
You're making me sad.
No, I won't do that, but I'll have to make way for the new story, whatever that is.
Well, I will call out one of the rewards that people should probably check out. I think one of them is like you're giving away panels, like watercolor panels of the book to people.
Those
are beautiful. So I only wish I could afford that reward level. But
I'll tell you now that the watercolor, everyone who comes to the booth, I always say, look, you got to look at the originals, because the card copy is cool and the digital copies are good. They look good. But seeing the original art and seeing the watercolor, the vibrancy of it and everything is just really, really cool. So those who want to go a little high roller and get some original art, it's actually pretty cool. Because I'm actually just giving away – not giving away, but I'm like, you know, I'm getting – you could be part of the original book, you know, and get the actual art. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah. And they look gorgeous. They're absolutely beautiful. So, well, great. Well, thank you so much for coming on to Part-Time Fanboy, Andres.
Hey, man, I appreciate your time so much. Anyone can come check out my stuff. You can go to the Kickstarter. Really simple. I just made it my homepage. So if you just go to pariahmissouri.com, it shoots you right over to the Kickstarter. You can download for free the preview pages of books 1, 2, and 3. So you can kind of check out all the books right then and there for free.
That's awesome. Yeah, definitely everyone should go there. I think it's a beautiful book. I got your email and I was like, I remember this book. So you definitely did something right. Like I didn't even have to think twice about it. So you've done something right. I think it's a beautiful looking book. I really like the story, and you know, you should definitely go to the page and fund it. I've put down my own money, which is hard for me to do sometimes. So anyway, definitely check it out. This is Andres Salazar, and he is the creator of Pariah, Missouri. And my name is Christian Horn, and this is Part-Time Fanboy. You can follow us on Twitter, check out our Facebook page. I also have an Instagram. And thank you for listening, and go fund Pariah, Missouri. It's a great book.
Part-time fanboy.com.